Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to another episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I'm your pop culture and sports nerd. Ali?
I am Ali, your classic nerd.
And I'm VM, your comic book nerd.
You looked at me like all strange, like, because I did the intro on one take.
Yeah, no.
One take Diz, baby, what's good? You know what? It happened because something happened to me last week after we recorded the podcast.
I got a call at 4 a.m.
You got a text first saying, you up.
Are you up?
It's like a booty call.
Which the reality is, I'm always up.
Yeah.
But a nocturnal creature.
I was really worried that you were going to think I was drunk and texting you.
No.
Right? Because like I texted Ali literally like at 4:30 a.m, like, hey, you up?
Yeah,
and he's like, yeah, what's up? I'm like, yo, I'm going to call you in a little bit. So I give him a call. This is what happened.
I thought someone had died.
Well, I'll get to this. V, this is the first time you're hearing of this.
Yes.
I've heard this. This was actually an interesting story.
He heard this. So
it's not going to take you 30 minutes to talk about it, is it?
I don't know. As long as you guys don't keep interrupting me.
I don't need any exposition like you're driving to P.F. Chang's or some bullshit.
Shut up.
Okay.
I go to bed at like 12 o'clock, right, as per usual, and I'm totally passed out. I wake up because I hear like some banging outside, right? Because I sleep next to the window. So I'm hearing banging, and that kind of wakes me up. And then I hear somebody yelling, help me. Help me. Please help me. Help me.
Just shit haunted?
I thought I was dreaming, right? I'm tripping out. I'm like, yo, I am fucking dreaming. Like, there's demons in my dream asking for help.
Diz dreams of damsels in distress.
Right?
It's an incubus.
I look outside, and there's literally a girl running around screaming, crying, asking for help. And I hear my Persian neighbor open his door. He's like, what do you want? So I'm like, I quickly go to the door and I open my door to see what the hell's going on. This girl just runs to my apartment, right? And I'm like, what's going on? What's wrong? Yeah. She's like, you need to help me. Please save me. Protect me. Help me. I'm like, what is going on? Like, what do you need? What do you need protection from? Is someone trying to hurt you? She's like, yes, my brother is attacking me. I'm like, where is your brother? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, how is he attacking you? He's attacking me spiritually. He's doing black magic on me.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, what? Yeah, he's doing black magic on me. I don't know if
ethnicity was this girl?
Huh?
What the ethnicity was she?
She looked white, right? So I'm talking to her, and her name is Maria, right? And I'm like, okay, that's a whatever.
Latina
name, but
Hispanic.
You're very white. Like, she was as light skinned and she had blonde hair. I was like, okay, whatever, maybe they just named her after another famous Maria or something. She might be Greek, right? But like, she's going off and telling me how her brother's doing black magic and she feels dizzy, she feels like she's gonna faint, she needs help. So I'm like, all right, let me call the police for you so we can make sure that they take care of you. She's like, okay. I called the police.
She said okay.
Yeah, she said okay.
So here's the question. Did she seem, despite the hysteria, crazy or sane?
She
sounded like she was drugged out.
She sounded like she was whacked out.
She was like she had done some of the good shit.
She looked out of it. Like
she had done
yeah.
like, bloodshot that, eyes.
Yeah. On that Molly or something.
Yeah, because she kept pacing back and forth. Because then after I called the police, she asked me to call her parents. So I called her parents because she kept telling me her parents were on their way, right? Called her parents. Her parents tell me they're still in Anaheim, and they haven't gotten a call from her all night, and they don't know.
She live in Anaheim?
I guess.
How old is she?
She was 28, right?
She's not your age.
Yeah, she was my age. And the only reason I know is because when the paramedics came, they asked her her birthday, and she gave her birthday, which was like close to mine. I was like, okay, so she's my age.
March what? What? June what?
It wasn't June. It was January. It was January 89 is when she was born. So I'm on the phone like with her pops. And then this big-ass white dude who I've never seen before with a dog starts walking by, and he stops. And
Chihuahua?
Chihuahua? No, it's not my grandpa.
No, and I said, like, a little dog.
Oh, I thought you said Chihuahua. I was like, no.
It's a Chihuahua. What the, how did you get Chihuahua, which means grandpa in Farsi?
That's what we called our grandpa. Yeah.
How did you get that from Chihuahua?
I don't know. They sound similar.
No, it was not even remotely close.
No, it was a big-ass dog, too. It was like a big, like, pit bull looking thing, right? So it was a pretty big dog. He's a pretty big, like, tall, bald white dude, and he was pretty muscular looking, just staring. And he's like, I know her, right? And like, they're like, okay, well, what's going on? She's like, it's my friend. He's like, hey, Maria, Maria. And she's like, let him talk to my parents. So I give the phone.
So how did he end up in the same place as her?
Because at this time, the paramedics had come, right?
You know, but how was, did he live in the area?
I guess. I don't know.
Was she visiting him?
I'm not sure. So here's what happened is, like, I give him my phone to talk to her parents, right? So he talks to her parents, and all of a sudden he's like, nah, no, what the fuck? You're tripping. You're tripping. Get the fuck out of here. And she's like, get him off the phone. So I get my phone back, and he's like, man, fuck that. They're tripping. I'll call her mom later. And he just walks away. And I'm like, okay. And then they hang up the phone. And then, like, finally the cops start, or the paramedics start, like, taking her out and shit. Mm-hmm. Cops come. Cops are being total dicks, by the way. Because my mom's pretty freaked out, you know? Like, some random white dude's just sitting there staring at us.
Your mom probably thinks I tried to kill her.
That they're going to try to kill her?
The I tried to kill her.
Probably. But, so, like, some, you know, like, some random dude is sitting there staring at the house, and he looks drugged out. The girl's probably drugged out. Mm. And, like, so she's freaking out. So she tells the cops that she's worried. She's like, you know, I've never seen that guy before. He told the paramedics he lives in this neighborhood, and he doesn't. You know, like.
So that guy claims to be her friend.
Yeah.
She's saying, I don't know who he is.
No, she's saying she knows him. But then she told him to get off the phone with her parents. So they knew each other. Right. Whatever she was on, they probably did it together.
Then why is she saying, I don't know this guy?
She didn't say, I don't know this guy. She said, get him off the phone with my parents. She told him first to talk to her parents, and then when they started getting into it, her and her, like, her dad and him.
So how are the cops being dicks?
So my mom tells, like, the cops that she's kind of worried. Cop goes, you're fine. Safe neighborhood. Right? Like, just completely, like, shortchanging, like, everything she's saying. She's like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You'll be okay. Like, excuse me, sorry. Some girl just came over here, drug out of her mind.
But I mean, like, what did you want them to say? It's like, you're not going to be fine.
No. Okay, man.
Your fears are founded.
No, it's listen a little. Okay, so we'll stay for about 5 minutes to make sure, and, like, nothing's going on. Okay. And then we'll leave.
You wanted them to be just more considerate.
Yeah, be more, like, you know, like, empathetic to, like, what's going on. You know, someone's fucking sitting there screaming for help at 3:30 in the morning, you know, like, and running around, drugged out, and some other
dude. The greatest part of the story has yet to come, though.
I'm waiting on it.
Yeah.
The greatest part of the story has yet to come.
So whatever. All this shit happens. Everyone leaves. I then remember my dumbass cousin called me at 11 o'clock saying, hey, I'm going to crash at your place tonight. And I'm like, all right, cool. I have an extra bedroom upstairs. I have a girl yelling, banging on the door, like, for asking for help. He sleeps through that. My mom running up and down the stairs, worried. He sleeps through that. Fucking sirens, ambulances, and paramedics outside my house sleep through that shit too.
Wow.
When I ask him about it the next day, like, yo, did you hear anything last night? Like, where the hell, what happened? Nah, what the fuck are you talking about, bro?
This is my favorite part.
Oh, shit.
If he had been, like, if you had been mugged,
yeah,
or there was a home invasion, he would have been the worst backup.
I'd have been dead.
Of all time. I mean...
Like, you know, prison guards get jobs. Like, prison guards. That's like a prison guard guy right there. Like,
if you think about it, you think there's strength in numbers, right?
But no, it doesn't happen.
You have someone over your house, like, all right, no one's going to break in. You have your cousin, no. Our cousin, I should say. It actually is it's an assistance.
Yeah, dude.
Cops ask, hey, what happened to the family that lived here? I don't know.
Yeah. He's like the guard in every single movie. Where it's like the people have to escape out of the jail, but he's like asleep on the stool.
Yeah.
You know? My family had a guard dog. Not my family, but my family in Afghanistan when I went to visit them a couple years back. And they had this guard dog who's a big, big-ass German shepherd who had been hit by a missile at one point.
Oh, shit.
A rocket landed in the garden and...
Holy shit.
And it kind of struck him. It didn't explode.
But still.
But it hit him.
I mean, how many of us could say we got hit by a missile?
He was an old-ass dog. Uh-huh. Giant German shepherd named...
Grizzled, man. Shit.
Named Tiger.
They named him Tiger?
It was probably the most misnamed dog I've ever seen.
Did they name him Tiger in English or in Farsi?
In Tiger. Huh? It was in Palang. It Palang? Means actual Tiger.
Huh. This is our... Bachim Sagamos Tiger.
Tiger. This is my Tiger. So Tiger was one of the most worthless guard dogs I had ever seen in my life. Everyone who came over, what he'd do, and the funny thing is, like, there's a walkway that you have to walk through to get to the door.
Uh-huh.
He would always sleep in that walkway because it was partial sun, partial shade.
Uh-huh.
And he never knew if he wanted to be warm or if he wanted to be cool. So he always sat there. But what he would do is, like, you'd have to get to the door, you would not walk around him. You would literally have to step over this giant ass. He'd open one eye and pretend not to see you, turning his face around. And he was like, this dog was so worthless. And I'm like, what was the point of having this dog? Not only does he not protect you, he actually opens his eyes, makes eye contact, and goes, I didn't see nothing, and turns around. This dog was worthless. That's what our cousin reminds me of.
That's pretty nice, yeah. I mean, to be fair, yeah.
Tiger is like legendary in the family for
Tiger Alomi?
Not doing shit.
Is it Tiger Alomi?
That's a good name. No, it's for my mom's.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. Tiger Alomi sounds like a cool name,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, but that is worthless. That's what you should name someone in Street our Fight. Cousin from now on. What's up, Tiger?
Fucking piece of shit.
Yeah. I mean, I have nowhere to criticize. I slept through an armed robbery in Panama once. Yeah, so, you did. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
There's an armed robbery. They knocked on his door.
They stole other people's iPods and stuff, and you just went and slept through it.
V-Trans slept to safety.
I'm just going to point out that both of you are worthless when it comes to danger. Earthquakes. I wake up, I go, it's an earthquake. Roll over, go back to bed.
But whereas you don't update your Facebook like everyone else does?
I don't
update
my Facebook. I don't check if anyone's all right. If you're going to die from a natural disaster, me texting you isn't going to make a difference.
God's will.
You know? If God wills it.
God wills it.
God wills it.
Or as the Crusaders say, Deus Vult.
Yeah. I didn't do bad in danger. I woke up and stood up to danger.
No, you woke up. You engaged. I don't engage with things like that. I don't open the door during the day.
Uh-huh.
Much less than if someone's knocking on my door, please help. Motherfucker, you're going to die.
Yeah, my friends yelled at me the next day. They're like, you're so stupid.
Please help me. You know, like if there was like someone running around, I'm like, no, you dead.
Yeah.
Nothing I can do about it.
Okay, let me ask you something now. Because my friends yelled at me. They said I was stupid and they wouldn't do the same thing.
I would have done the same thing. You as joking as I am, I would have.
If someone's
asking for help.
Yeah, if you hear somebody yelling, help me, screaming and banging on doors.
What would you do? Would you open the door?
Well, if someone yelled for help, then yes. But if someone was just screaming, I'd be like, well,
it is what it is.
I don't know. You know, I don't know what you're into.
I don't know, man.
And plus, did you notice that every single story you tell always ends up being you bragging about how good you are?
No.
He does have a point there.
Shut up. Here's the thing, though.
It's not even a humble brag. It's just a brag.
Because they yelled at me the next day.
Like, for being too good? For helping somebody?
No, because they
my flaw is I have too kind of a heart.
No, because they said I endangered my family.
Oh, my God.
Like, my friend was like, you endangered your mom. You're an idiot.
I don't know about that. I don't think you endangered anybody.
Would your mom have opened the door?
Probably not.
Did you look out? Did she have a knife? No. Yeah. Okay, you're okay. Yeah. What you gonna do?
Seriously. Well, and do these people do they get upset about the whole innocent bystander syndrome? Do they get upset about that stuff?
I don't know. I've never.
So this is the problem, right? It's like when you see something, you're supposed to do something,
right?
Yeah. But like in big cities, bystander syndrome is a real thing where people. Yeah. I was just watching the other day that this like a guy died in India,
uh-huh.
got hit by a car, completely knocked out of the way, onto the side, and people drove by for hours without ever checking on him. And some people stopped, looked, and just kept going.
The hell?
Just bystander syndrome. Some guy actually stopped to steal his wallet.
What the fuck?
And didn't do anything about it.
What the hell?
Humanity is all class.
Yeah, see, one of my friends was there. One of the friends who yelled at me about opening the door was there on the freeway when that plane hit the freeway. He just drove by, recorded it on his phone, and drove away.
Yeah, but that's a little bit different. If it's an airplane has crashed, there's not a lot you can do. What are you going to do? Start cleaning up the wreckage?
Yeah.
No, but
it's on fire. Seriously. Hot. It's a dangerous metal. There isn't anything you can do.
Well, people did.
If it's a car crash, there's something you can do.
No, but people did. You know, people, the reason those two people that were in the plane crash survived were because people got out of their cars.
I just assumed it was Harrison Ford.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who it was.
Him and the 405 in planes seemed to, yeah.
Well, also, golf course. He landed on a golf course once.
That's true.
He's been in, four different...
Yeah, because he lives right here. Emergency. He lives in Mission Viejo.
I feel like he's,
Not Mission Viejo. He lives, close by, though.
Yeah.
Is Harrison Ford, the John McCain of Hollywood?
I don't know.
You know, I feel like he's kind of like the John McCain of Hollywood.
No, but like I was saying, you know, when they crashed... Two people pulled them out of the plane and then it exploded. They would have died. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, if that's a different. If it's on fire, there's nothing.
Yeah. Like I just drove
by. Would you pull someone out of an exploding plane, Diz?
I don't think so.
I don't know. That's a weird.
Diz, you have limitations on your bravery. You get scared easily.
Mm.
But I still open the
You're
door.
Afraid of mangoes and peanuts.
It's God's allergic reactions. There's not a fear.
A scary story will send you
That's not true.
A solid scary story.
Did you guys watch our Five Nights at Freddy's 3 video?
Okay, first of all, I had been drinking prior to playing that game. I've
been drinking prior to playing
that. I had been drinking. It was late at night. Ali was telling me ghost stories, and it was dark.
You slept with the light on that night.
People jumped at me. There's rabbits outside my house, and a scary rabbit was jumping at me.
You literally slept with the light on for a couple days, actually.
One night. It was one night.
I'll tell you, the only time I've ever been so scared that I slept with the lights on. Only happened once in my life. Yeah. That doesn't mean I've never been scared after that. There's times where I was a little kid, I watched a scary movie, mm-hmm. and like, fuck this shit. I'm sleeping with a sword next to my bed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I remember that sword. Yeah.
But that sword eventually just stayed there forever.
Yeah.
In case there was ever
intruders. Every time I was at your house, I would play with that damn sword. Yeah,
there's always a sword next to my bed. Even now, there's a rapier next to my bed, along with two wooden katanas and a bow staff.
I have a brass knuckle knife.
In case, you know, because everyone envisions the home invasion scenario, right?
Of course.
What would happen if someone kicks open your door? Naturally, this also goes like the NRA myth.
Or
somehow everyone assumes that they're going to be able to pull it off. All of a sudden,
action movies.
Yeah. The reality is, like, if you're a gun owner, 99% of the chance, you're probably going to shoot yourself.
Yeah, you have to go in safe.
You're pretty stupid.
I'm a responsible gun owner.
You don't understand. When adrenaline rushes, your hands are shaking, your body, you're going to shoot somebody else. That's the reality, right?
Like that Oscar Pistorius guy.
That's why I prefer a sword, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to stab somebody.
That's true.
And if I go down, I'm going down swinging. So anyways, there's this only one time that I legitimately got scared, and it was...
When Trump got elected?
No.
Okay.
I cried myself to sleep.
Okay. You didn't sleep with the light on? No. I sure as hell did.
No, I prepared myself. If they're going to come for me, I'm taking them down with me. I envisioned seceding. Lisa Viejo succeeds from the Union.
I can see you like doing the Theoden speech. A red day!
No, there's actually Uruk-hais outside. I'm on the balcony.
I'm just picturing you with your bow staff sitting outside.
Like, it's the dawn of the orc, the age of the orc.
You're the Orthanc? Is that what you were saying? You're gonna Orthanc?
I was gonna Orthanc it. This was it. Elisa Viejo secedes from the Union. That'd be great.
For anyone who doesn't know what the Orthanc, can you explain what the Orthanc is?
The Orthanc comes from if you don't know what it is, first of all, shame on you.
Yeah, seriously.
Second of all, go watch Lord of the Rings. It comes from the second movie, Twin Towers.
The two towers. Oh, God. Oh, jeez.
I almost spit out my water.
Some macabre humor there. Oh, jeez. So the two towers.
What if the eagles flew into those? I'm sorry.
So the two towers. There's this moment where the second villain, basically, Sauron, is out on this giant-ass fucking tower called Orthanc. And he gives a speech to his fighting Uruk-hai. That's what we're referencing.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't said what I was legitimately.
Yeah, what were you scared of?
It was third grade. I remember it like it was yesterday, and I had just seen the movie Fire in the Sky.
Oh no!
So with the aliens.
So for me, I've never been. I wasn't afraid of aliens. I knew I could take the little buggers.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't afraid of aliens. I'm not afraid of the supernatural.
You're afraid of getting anal probed.
Because I'm like, you know what? Chances of it happening, not real.
Plus, you signed that contract.
I signed a deal with the devil, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm more afraid of normal people. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Neighbors, that type of shit.
Because that happens,
you know what I mean?
That is true,
Running across a demon or a ghost, you know, we all got holy water somewhere.
Yeah.
We're good. But for me, the thing that freaked me out was not the aliens. It was like the surgical shit that they do.
Yeah.
Because I have like I don't like gore.
Uh-huh.
Right? I don't like, it's not that I don't like gore in the sense like I don't like blood. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
It's like the inner thing. So
yeah, like flesh tearing.
Have you ever seen Men in Black 3?
Yeah.
You know that the main bad guy, he has like a creature in his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And how his hand like opens up. That grosses me out.
Uh-huh.
I go, oh, right. Like I unfriended your mom on Facebook because she posted some shit about like someone's fingers getting like sliced into millions of pieces and it spelled Allah. Right?
And man, I was what like, type of shit is your mom putting up on Facebook?
She's putting up like
deals.
A miracle thing, you know, like one of those Facebook. You know, how moms put up like, I don't know, dude. They put up like oh look, it's a miracle.
She's putting shit about people getting their hands sliced up, and your friends are worried about her when a girl's running around.
The fingers that sliced into the, like the name of God. Right? And she's like, oh look, it's a miracle. But for me, I'm like, all I saw was layers of skin.
Yeah.
For me, that's what I saw. So like, I hate the idea of powerlessness, right? Like you can't do anything.
Uh-huh.
Like if you have no anesthesia and can't move, that shit like that.
Oh yeah, like
and what is just, it? Like getting cut, like that stuff. It's not that it like it terrifies. It makes me angry.
Yeah, my dad was watching that
Fire in the Sky.
Fire in the Sky on HBO. Legit. I was in kindergarten, and I had walked out because I was like. It was late at night, and I walked out, and I saw him.
Come back in the scene?
I came back in that scene. That's where I saw.
With the eye and the mouth?
Yeah.
Oh.
Freaked me out. Went back to my room, started screaming and yelling, and then he had to come and...
You were a bit of a chicken as a kid,
though. I was 5 years old. That scared you.
Yeah, it did scare me.
Scared the shit out of me, too.
I slept with the light on for two nights, legit.
I slept next to my dad.
But we also scared the shit out of you with Candyman.
Yeah.
Oh, Candyman.
That one scared the fuck out of me, bro.
Yeah, you know what it was for me was when we were in elementary school.
Yeah.
It was Halloween night. We just got back from getting candy.
Yeah.
And I'd put on, we turned on the TV and it was on like, I think it was like KDOC, like a local access channel. Mm-hmm. They were playing Freddy Krueger. Mm. And I remember because it was one of the ways that he killed someone was like he like put a girl in like a roach motel and she became a roach and like her arms got ripped off and stuff.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was like 6 years old, so that really fucked me up in the head.
To be honest with you, I never... Freddy Krueger never frightened me. Jason never frightened me. None of those like traditional horror movies don't scare me.
It wasn't Freddy that scared me. It was the way that girl died.
For me, it was
fine. Scared the fuck out of me.
I was afraid of the dark.
And then I watched Sleepaway Camp.
Mustafa's bitch ass.
Speaking of movies, we should mention in new nerd news...
Yeah.
Right? Something kind of developed. First, Ron Howard... He's taking over for Han Solo, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Director.
We talked about this last episode or the episode before that, how there was this crisis in the Han Solo movie because the directors fell.
Lord and Miller.
Two fucking directors.
But they're a team of directors.
Now we have Ron Howard, so we'll see. I mean, Ron Howard's a pretty decent director, pretty good director.
He's a pretty good director.
I think Han Solo's in a good...
His recent good stuff has been a little bit off, think he can... Yeah, but he's good.
He also did... Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, but he just did Inferno, which wasn't particularly good.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, Ron Howard has a lot of good movies. He's very accomplished in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So I think he'll do the franchise justice.
Yeah, he'll do well.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that. But I also saw the trailer for Jumanji.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
It looked cool. I like how they reimagined it.
I tweeted out from Current Unity, Jumanji doesn't have a board.
No.
It's a video game. Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. Why?
They're trying to modernize the concept. Yeah,
but why? Okay.
Because it's supposed to be like an ancient game, right? Isn't that what the whole point of Jumanji is?
I'm just gonna say
in the original movie. Yeah.
First of all, I don't think Hollywood knows what a remake is.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Right? A remake is you remake something and you up because of the technology.
Okay.
Right? Or you take a kind of different approach to it. That doesn't mean you create an entirely new movie that's loosely connected to what you previously had. I mean, Jumanji is about a game coming to life. This is like, they've got avatars, they're in some jungle somewhere, they're not playing the game anymore. That's not Jumanji.
They are playing the game.
That's Tron. With jungles.
Yeah.
They're in the game.
Jungletron.
It's Jungletron.
Yeah.
It's basically what... That's what I saw. And don't get me wrong. I love me some Kevin Hart.
I love Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
But...
I don't know. I'm excited for it.
Jumanji with Tron thrown in is basically what I saw.
Well, because the first one was like... What? The character that Robin Williams was got stuck in the game for like 30 years.
Yeah, and that's... It's also like... It's hard to remake a movie that we have a lot of sentimental attachment to.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis Robin Williams.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Like, are they going to, you know?
Fun fact, Kristen Dunst was in that movie.
Yes, she was. She was a little girl.
Yeah. And then David Alan Grier was also in that movie.
Oh, yeah. He was the shoemaker guy.
He was the shoemaker and the cop.
Yeah. Both.
I love David Alan Grier. That guy's hilarious.
He does the yell always gets me when he's, He was on the, I think it's on the door, right? The door and the flood.
No, it's when, like, the monkeys take over everything.
Yeah, but there's one where it's like he's literally, and he just looks over as like, a tiger or something gets flooded next to him, and he just, It's just, like, it's just one of those perfectly timed, because his, like, face doesn't change. Mm-hmm. His eyes stay the same. He just opens his mouth and elicits a cry.
Hey, am I tripping? Are those kids in the end of the movie, like, recognize Robin Williams and, like, his girlfriend?
They do recognize him a little bit.
But they weren't born yet. Yeah, no, it's a memory they haven't had yet.
It was a very bizarre.
Yeah.
It was a very odd moment.
It was a movie about a board game that sent jungle animals
Doesn't matter. You fucked up the space-time continuum.
You woke up, the first conscious...
Butterfly effect. Had Robin Williams not been there, those kids wouldn't have been born, and in that house... Something happened.
Okay, you're just overdoing it now.
I'm just saying.
You're overdoing it.
Seriously.
But the thing that frustrates me about Jumanji, this new movie, is the idea that Hollywood is running out of ideas. All they're doing is remakes, and they're not doing... And the sad thing is, they're not doing good remakes.
Yeah.
All they're doing is just throwing in big CGI. I've always said this. You only remake a movie if the previous movie was limited by technology.
Man. Yeah, and even then, like... They don't even... Sometimes it doesn't translate particularly well, like World of the Worlds or like...
Don't update movies that don't need to be updated.
I mean, like Clash of the Titans, the newer one from years... I mean, the original Clash of the Titans wasn't a great movie by any sense of the bill. It was like claymation, but it had a certain quality to it, right? And then the new one that they remade...
Is an extra Clash of the Titans.
They had the technology to make it really interesting and to make it kind of cool, but they went like a completely different route and they kind of ruined
that's
it.
That's exactly
like,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So they made this movie that has nothing to do with the original Clash of the Titans. It's just very loosely...
Well, it's hard to remake movies because you have people that are like attached to things. Like
yeah, but when you loosely make something, then it's like... Then
I know,
it's,
but like, look,
you're not remaking.
So...
You're just doing something else
when
and adding the name.
Yeah, all you're doing is you're basically trying to take that fandom or that
because
people who are connected with that and then you're moving
it
even into
harder. That's why it makes it hard to do that. I don't know why they keep trying to do remakes and stuff. How many remakes actually work out well? Right, like not remakes that they've done from like a Japanese movie and that they've brought over, but like a remake of an American movie, right? That they've redid now. And it's the new one is better than the original. Like,
I think we also need to take into consideration audience, right? And I think you mentioned fandoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So audience is an important part of this. On one hand, movies are made predominantly in order to reach a broad audience base, right? As many people as possible. We're gonna make as much money as humanly possible, exploit the hell out of it. When it comes to a remake, they're not just trying to reach a broad audience. What they're trying to do is tap into a fandom that already exists.
Yeah.
Right? A group of fans. And this is also the same thing with writing, making books into movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So one of the things that they do when they transform books into movies is they need to keep true enough, at least in the trailer.
Yeah. To get the fans
of the
book.
To get the fans on board. Because the fans... of the fandom is where you're going to get the most money. They're the ones that'll buy the merch. They're the ones that'll promote it to their friends, and they'll go and see it no matter what.
Yep.
Whereas the ordinary person is just a casual consumer.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's worth looking into, because we are a nerd podcast, the nature of fandoms. How do fandoms come to be? What are fandoms? The role of fandoms in society. Are they a good thing? Are they a bad thing? And the kind of... the way they're used or are part of the system that produces movies and books and whatnot, and merchandise, etc. Because I think, on one hand, fandoms clearly have capital.
Yeah.
Very clearly, right? They are the ones that they're going to buy. I mean, without the Harry Potter fandom, Harry Potter, the movie series, would never have been as successful as
it was. Yeah, wouldn't have made billions of dollars.
No way, right? Because not only is it just the movies, they're the ones that buy the wands, they're the ones that buy the cloaks, that buy the scarves, that buy the merchandise, that get the tattoos, right? I don't know how many girls I've seen.
With the Deathly Hallows tattoo?
The Deathly Hallows tattoo, right? Yeah. Or we'll have Always, or have the lightning bolt, right? Yeah. So it's not an uncommon thing.
I'm tattooing a... what is that shit? The house sigil of Hufflepuff.
George Mormont?
No, I'm getting the Hufflepuff sigil.
The
badger. Honey badger.
It's not a honey badger.
It's a honey badger. Honey badger don't give a shit.
Yeah, honey badger doesn't give a shit. But honey badger is a lot smaller.
Well, I'll just get a little badger.
It's a badger. It's a classic British badger.
Yeah, it's a honey badger.
Which are in themselves actually quite dangerous.
Yeah.
I never want to fuck with a badger.
That's true.
Right. We get that right on my ankle.
I mean, actually, when you actually say that you're badgering someone, that means that you're fucking with them.
Yeah, you're messing with people.
So that means that a badger would fuck you up,
whatever reason, the badger is...
I don't know. So, like, I think phantoms are great for the people that are trying to exploit the phantoms. But you also see a negative side of fandoms because, like, you'll see they'll get to the point where the people that they're fans of can do no wrong, right?
So it, a bit of a cult of personality.
Yeah. And you'll see that because, like, even in today's, like, political, like, landscape, you have the fucking Donald Trump fans or the Trumpkins, as you like to call them, right?
They call them Trumpkins.
Right?
It's a good name.
Because he's a pumpkin-looking piece of shit. Yeah. But, like, no matter what he does, right? He can do no wrong. Fucking NPR tweets out the Declaration of Independence, and his fucking fans think that he's attacking Donald Trump. So they start trashing the Declaration of Independence.
Only in the United States of America would the fans of the president find the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution an insult.
To the president, right? Okay. They're literally just tweeting out the Declaration of Independence, and that's what his fans did. There is nothing that this man can do that is too wrong for them. There's no
limited, line. Limited to the... Now, it's dangerous when it comes to politics.
Yes.
I think when we see it in politics, that's where we're frightened. But we see it actually exist before Donald Trump, right?
Uh-huh.
How many people who followed YouTube fandoms, you know, Sam Pepper and various YouTubers who did horrible things...
Yeah.
But didn't lose their fans.
Yeah, and people right? still cool defend fans. Sam Pepper.
And they defended them, right? Oh, well, it wasn't actually...
Yeah.
Like, what was that? That Viner guy that got caught coercing his girlfriend to have sex with him.
I don't remember that.
And put out a video, right? Like,
yeah. Well, you know, it's probably some...
She was underage, too, so it was like statutory rape or something.
He was some pretty white kid with two first names.
And I think he was actually an Asian kid.
Really?
He was one of the popular Asian kids.
V was like stunned. What? It was one of us?
No, it's fine.
But people defended him. People were like, oh, no, he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, or what's even worse is they attack the credibility of the victim.
Or they attack
the make the somehow they make it that the victim was a bad person.
Or Chris Brown. Chris Brown is a violent woman abuser.
Yeah,
that's true. He still has a rabid fan base that adores and loves him.
Yeah,
he still puts out music. Like the same thing with a lot of fans, a lot of these kind of celebrities, that they still put out products,
right?
Yeah,
and people consume.
Sean Penn nearly killed Madonna.
And
his fans.
Johnny Depp, right? Where Johnny Depp? I mean, people kind of defend him, but let's be real. Not only is there the corroborating. Now people are starting to believe him because his ex-manager is starting to say shit, but it's Amber Heard also said shit, right? Yeah. It happened to her, but no one believed her.
Yeah, that thing's like the media made Amber Heard look crazy.
Horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
She donated all the money, everything.
Yeah.
Right? But at the end of the day, she was the bad guy.
Yeah, because
Johnny Depp was the good guy.
Because she...
And now when the ex-manager's like, yeah, he's abusive, people are like, oh, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah.
So they completely ignored the female victim. Screw her, right?
Seriously.
It's misogynist, sexist, double standard right there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an example of a fandom, right? Because of his cult of personality, people are unwilling to take on any form of criticisms.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we even see that with, like, I mean, in Hollywood more so than anything, like Woody Allen. He hasn't done anything big in a long time, but, like, I mean, he married...
He's put out a few movies.
Yeah, I know, but it's like he's successful in Hollywood. But there's like plenty of things, even then, like Bryan Singer, you know, he's been accused of a lot of assault by the Egan guy and all that stuff. Or even, I mean, look at the UK, Jimmy Savile. Mm-hmm. You know, people knew that he was.
Yeah, Jimmy Savile was an open secret.
Yeah, like people knew, and people joked about Jimmy Savile and the fact that he would assault younger women.
Well, the same thing with Donald Trump. Kind of an open secret that he's had multiple affairs. He's had a lot of the people he's had affairs with were quite young, allegedly, right? And nothing's really come of it. On one hand, there's an element of power and privilege that plays into celebrity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're wealthy, because they're powerful.
They get away with shit.
Yeah.
Right? On the other end, there's the cult of personality. And it's because of this reason. Now, on one hand, you go, okay, well, it's celebrities. Who cares? You still buy their product. There's a problem. You see it most clearly when it suddenly enters into the political arena, like you pointed out, right?
Yeah.
But this is why a lot of kind of studies into fandom see them as first as a form of psychopathy, right? That there is a sort of maladaptive component to it, that people are usually put into two categories of fandoms, hysterical or obsessive.
Okay.
Right? And that, therefore, the fandom is the realm of the socially alienated, maladaptive. But that's, I think that's a really limited way of understanding fandoms. Yeah, there's a dangerous side to it. The cult of personality is dangerous. But if you look at it through the lens of sociology, fandoms are produced vis-a-vis what's called, what sociologists called, artificial social relationships.
Okay.
Right? Meaning, now, artificial doesn't mean fake.
Uh-huh.
Right? Doesn't mean that it's any less real, but that it's different from physical interaction with one another. And this actually has a function in society, especially in late-stage capitalism, right? So what happens in late-stage capitalism is identity starts to fall apart. The classical identities have already been overthrown by capitalism, right? Okay. So religious identity, identity vis-a-vis history, identity vis-a-vis customs and traditions and culture all kind of fall apart under capitalism. You have new identities, right? Basically like the citizen, quote-unquote.
Uh-huh.
These new identities, however, are destable. They're unstable, right? And easily destabilized. And as a result, you need to find new ways of forming identities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways which people kind of fill the vacuum is fandoms. Fandoms are essentially identity forming. You are a Whovian. You are a Potter. Right?
Yeah.
You are Trekkie.
Yeah.
These are ways of creating new identities with yourself, for yourself. And you do so vis-a-vis a relationship, either with something abstract, be it a product or an individual or a celebrity that you have some type of connection with, right?
Uh-huh.
Some type of artificial connection with. Or you do it vis-a-vis social interaction with other fans. You are part of one group of
like
people.
Like going to conventions and shit?
Well, like going to conventions. Like
forums.
To conventions, yeah. Going on to online forums, fan sites, right? All of the, Twitter, right? One Direction Twitter. All of those are ways of creating fandoms. And so they serve a real a productive sociological purpose. That is identity formation. It helps with people's group relationships. It's also ways by which people explore things like sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Explore things like identity. Explore things like fantasy. All of that plays a role. And in that way, it's an active formation that uses cultural value vis-a-vis social structures or social groups.
Mm-hmm.
So there is cultural value there, and it's done actively. You can't see fandoms. I think in a lot of ways we're tempted to see, especially when we look at cultural personalities, we're tempted to see fandoms as kind of passive, right? So fans are a result of celebrity.
Uh-huh.
Celebrity exists, fans are produced.
Okay.
But you can argue it's a much more dialogical process. It's an active process. That there's a dialogical component there. That the celebrity is created because there are fans that invest in the celebrity.
Okay.
Just because you make movies doesn't make you a celebrity automatically.
True. Plenty of people make movies.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the creation. The celebrity is a combination of obviously the market,
uh-huh.
right? The celebrity or star-making industry that churns them out and creates controversy and stories and, ooh, look, the big new thing, right? And they all do it. They, one actor comes out and suddenly 500 articles by Hollywood Reporter and E! News and whatnot, and that's part of the, that's the industry working. But there's another component, and that is the fans. Fans get involved.
And make that person
popular. And make
popular.
That possible. And so, I think that's interesting, because if you look at fans as an active rather than a passive pathology,
uh-huh.
I think it's a more useful way of understanding fans. Now, that, you recognize that there is a dark side to fandoms, that there is a negative side, a dangerous side. We talked about it last week in our episode. If you haven't heard the episode, go check it out,
uh-huh.
right, where we talked about how fans, the cult, especially the cults of personality in social media, it can be problematic, right?
True.
The Christian Burns scenario or the mobbing scenario with Logan Paul.
Yeah.
Right? That those are serious problems, or the kind of rabid fans of Sargon of Akkad,
yeah.
who somehow think themselves superior because they have these mild, you know, mediocre intellects, right? Mm-hmm. That's all a problematic side of celebrity.
Well, you also have like the side where like that one guy fell in love with What was her name? Sybil Shepherd or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, he ended up shooting Reagan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, okay, that's called obsessive fandom. But here's the thing. We treat that as an exception. The problem is that most people view that as the defining characteristic of fandoms. And that's not true. Fandoms are normal people. It's normal, ordinary processes. So fandoms are ultimately productive. Then there are these maladaptives on the fringe of it. But the problem is that if you look at just the fringe and define everything based off of the fringe, then you're going to see fandoms as pathologies, as destructive rather than productive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
There's another component of fandoms, and I think this ties into our last week episode, and that is the component of social media. Uh-huh. Right, so social media fandoms, that is fans that come out of YouTube, Instagram, and Vine, are, I think, of a different component than fans of Harry Potter, fantasy and sci-fi, Harry Potter.
Their fans are younger, wouldn't you say?
It's not just the fans, it's because they're selling something different.
They're selling themselves?
They're selling a fake relationship.
Huh.
And that's different. Whereas the Harry Potter world, you're a fan of the fantasy of Harry Potter.
Right? Yeah, you know it's not real.
Yeah, the ability to imagine, the ability to put yourself in the story. And also, you create the fandom vis-a-vis interaction with the group, right?
Mm-hmm.
A YouTube star, the fandom of a YouTube star, is produced by the YouTube star looking into the camera and pretending they have an intimate relationship with the audience. But they don't have an intimate relationship. You're a number. You're a nameless, faceless
person. Yeah, you're just a view. You're a subscriber. View,
but we're selling that. So there's a different component to it. I think in many ways, perhaps we can see this as another development in the capitalism of celebrity, is that it's no longer about a talent or a fantasy or a dream. It's about quite literally marketing emotion. You belong. You are part of our crew, right? Like, people actually, like, YouTubers deliberately call their fans by certain names. We even do it.
Yeah, sexy right? nerds.
The sexy nerds.
Of the Nerd Imperium. Yeah.
Right? It's like there's a conscious selling of a relationship that happens with this, I think, social media fandom that's kind of a whole different phenomenon that's really interesting and worth exploring.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things, you know, you had mentioned these fandoms, and, you know, we talked about Otherkin a couple weeks ago, and it really kind of got me down another interesting rabbit hole with Tumblr again with furries.
Mm.
And this is interesting because I was just at Anime Expo, and there was a handful of people who were also furries that were at Anime Expo because, you know, the cultures kind of clash with one another a little bit. It's kind of a deep love for things like cosplay, costume design, art as well. And there's also a mix of, you know, animals and kind of anthropomorphizing things. What's crazy is that I ended up looking up a lot of this stuff. And, you know, I thought furries was a relatively new phenomenon, but it turns out it's actually started in the 80s with fanzines, right?
Yeah.
The first actual convention started in 1989, which is crazy. And they've actually differentiated what a furry is as opposed to an anthropomorphized animal. Like, funny animals like Disney's Robin Hood is not really a furry per se. It's more so like it's just an anthropomorphized funny character of an animal. Whereas a furry tends to be like someone who is like deeper than that, right? And there's a big thing, there's a big pushback because things with mainstream media, like Vanity, there's a Vanity Fair article that came out a long time ago, as well as like a CSI show, where they only focused on kind of the sexual component of furries. Like, every furry convention was a deviant convention where they would be yiffing on one another, and it was all about sex, mm-hmm. right? I originally thought that as well, until I started looking more into it, and it's actually much more rich culture than I had originally thought when I had first gotten kind of the introduction to it. You have a huge online communities, like art communities, Fur Affinity, Ink Bunny, and So Furry, or Weasel, right? And you also have social networking sites, Furry for Life, Fur Nation, Wiccafur, right? Which is like, mm-hmm. in your own way, it's like, you know, you're creating your own communities, you're creating your own groups, and you're identifying through these fandoms, mm-hmm. and you're creating yourself like your own little subculture.
They're not right? technically fandoms. They're subcommunities that have some sexual component and some non-sexual components. But they're not direct fandoms in the classic sense. Fandoms have a point by which they surround themselves around. So some furry communities may be fandoms if they are for example, a Digimon community.
Yeah.
Would be a furry fandom. Right?
Yeah.
A Pokemon furry fandom. But most furry communities are not fandoms. They're fantasy. It's different.
Right? Yeah.
So it's in the same way that LARPing is not a fandom.
That makes sense, yeah.
You have to be a fan of something.
Yeah.
Right?
Hence fandom,
so
I guess.
Hence fandom. So there is, they intersect, but they are kind of a fascinating separate thing that goes on that then touches into fandoms.
Yeah.
Right? So you go to AnimeCon, which is what? The epitome of fandoms, right?
Yeah.
Fans coming in, fandoms of whatever anime. But amongst them are who?
So I mean you see this, and this is interesting, is they actually it's heavy role playing community, right? Yeah. Because the costume design is so prevalent. They actually have their quote unquote fursonas, which end up being kind of, it's like they don't pretend to be real animals, right? But they play almost cartoon versions, like anthropomorphized cartoon versions of themselves as animals. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. So it's like, it's not so much like you're not an actual fox, but you're playing kind of the character that you want to be, who happens to be a fox that's, you know, has human features.
Hmm.
Right? So it's not like they're not like scratching around and growling at each other and like hunting for, you know, like dead flesh, mm-hmm. but they just happen to be a fox with interesting fox features in terms of personality traits.
And a significant number of them have a sexual fetish.
Yeah.
It's not entirely.
I mean, there's a point, yeah, you know, I mean,
but the reality is that there's,
I think with any subculture element, there's some type of sexuality associated with it no matter what. Really, you know, and through things like message boards and, you know, MUD, like Furcadia, multi-user dungeon type stuff, we saw like a kind of this burgeoning subculture become huge until this recently with cosplay and kind of the nerd culture blowing up. Furrydom also, you know, became even bigger than what it was.
Well, Furrydom also had traces its origins in quite clear terms, not just to the 1980s, but even earlier than that. And it comes out of Japanese culture, in which there is a significant fantasy component of anthropomorphized animals. For example, the
tentacle porn.
Not just tentacle porn. It's not just tentacle porn, but actual anthropomorphic animals, like the fox goddess.
Yeah.
Right, is a very common figure in Japanese culture, as well as in Japanese anime. The anthropomorphized animal is not uncommon. There's a lot of animes that have them. And so furries come out of this kind of merger of Japanese fan culture with American comic nerd culture.
Yeah.
The two of them mingling together vis-a-vis conventions is what really takes furries to the next level. But they have existed for quite some time, and in Japan, as it seems to be for most of nerd stuff, is the originator.
Yeah, that little island sure does a lot in terms of cultural capital.
Yeah.
The fur conventions are interesting because, so the local, local conventions are called fur meets, which is people literally, like local gatherings, right? And then now it's gotten bigger. AnthroCon in Pittsburgh just did $3 million in 2008 from AnthroCon itself. Conference was the first exclusive furry convention held in Southern California. And now it's called Califur. I actually ran into these people at In-N-Out Burger near my house one time. I didn't realize there was a convention, but it's actually nearby where we live in Orange County. Yeah. What's crazy about now is that, you know, we have this over this kind of this association with deviant behavior, mm-hmm. That was really kind of connected with gay and bisexual culture for a really long time, like in the early 2000s. And then, you know, they talk about plushophilia and deviancy, right? Like this like weird sexual fetish for plushy animals. And now there's a lot of people that are kind of pushing back against that belief because they're like, we like to dress up as animals and stuff, but we don't necessarily want to fuck stuffed animals or like all that other stuff. And you know, it's one of those, I think it's one of the most misunderstood ones because of that preconceived notion of heavy sexuality associated with the furry community. With modern times, we're actually seeing also on Twitter something called the alt-right is actually kind of co-opted. It's called the alt-furry movement now on Twitter, which is crazy. It's like this influx of right-wing furry culture where they talk about things like how that movie Zootopia is culturally Marxist, right? And it's like there was an interview by Rosen Kibbird on Vice where they were talking about how like the alt-furry movement is being shunned by guys like Richard Spencer because it's still technically kind of deviant behavior. It's also being shunned by the religious right because it's considered idolatry, right? But at the same time, they still hold these quote-unquote traditional conservative values, like things like free speech and like no, and like they're against this PC culture, right? But at the same time, they're also ones that are part of a community that's naturally much more inclusive because it's kind of fringe. So we're in this really weird, this is a really weird, I think, self-evaluation type thing where it's like they're trying to hold on to these really specific moral values that don't necessarily, that certain regimes of that also ascribe to that hard right moral value don't accept them in that way. And somehow they're still trying to associate some of themselves with the far right, which I always found to be very interesting. But they're also, at the same time, they talk about how their humor, like they talk about in some of the alt-furry message boards, they put up memes about like Jews doing 9/11, right? We talked about that last week, about the Jews doing 9/11 meme, right? But they say it's all in jest, like they don't really mean that stuff, that it's supposed to be about them trying to kind of turn PC culture on its own head. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're like, well, you're deviant to the people that you're trying to associate yourself with, and you're also being shunned by the people who you claim to be a part of as well. So I find the alt furry movement to be really interesting in that fact. Mm. You know, like it's like they naturally made themselves fringe on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, and there it's a weird
marginal community within a marginal space.
Yeah, and it's also hard, and there's a really great quote where they talk about how it's hard to separate hyperbole from truth in this culture, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're never really sure, because especially when things like Tumblr, when we're talking about other kin, you never really know if that online persona is truly someone who believes in who they are, or who they're actually, or there's someone who is a part of that who is trying to be a caricature to make fun of that culture, right?
Yeah.
Because then it's like the exaggerations are really hard to differentiate, because it is kind of extreme in the way that in those beliefs.
It's an unusual, yeah. It's certainly an unusual subculture that's worth exploring further and further. But part of it's also the fact that whenever there's sexuality involved,
people just don't want to pay attention.
It's always going to be a little bit messy.
Yeah.
On that hairy note, Diz, why don't you take us out?
I see what you did there, you piece like of it, shit. Huh? Yeah. You find us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy, Twitter @currentlynerdy, Instagram currentlynerdy on there, Tumblr currentlynerdy.tumblr.com, YouTube search currentlynerdy, watch our old YouTube videos. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Please give us a 5-star rating and give us a nice review. I think we got a new review. I'm going to look at it and read it next week because I want more people to review it so I could read more next week. If you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can they get a hold of you?
Of course, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at AAOLOMI or on my website at AliOlomi.com. You can also catch me on our sister podcast or child podcast, whatever you want to call it, Head on History. You can check it out on iTunes. Diz.
You can find me everywhere at Dizbullah, DizBullah.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in, and remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you.